Today we're going to talk about balance in regards to the position of Srila Prabhupada and the position of the whole disciplic succession, particularly the prominent acharyas within our disciplic succession, position with our spiritual master, with siksha gurus, with other devotees who inspire us, and try to understand the similarities and differences. And the reason that I think it's important to discuss this is because since the time Srila Prabhupada left, there's been, you could say, different styles or different understanding, or both, styles and understandings of how both gurus and disciples relate to their position, and also how we, both gurus and disciples, relate to Srila Prabhupada and the previous acharyas. And then also how we consider devotees in the future will relate to their guru, their siksha guru, and to Srila Prabhupada. And so in the evolution of that, we've seen some extremes on both ends of the totem pole. And initially, after Srila Prabhupada left, there was an extreme on the side of how Prabhupada's disciples, who take the position of guru, should be served and honored, and how the godbrothers, their godbrothers, should be served and honored. So right after Prabhupada left, there was a very strong emphasis on the position of guru, to such a point that it seemed to minimize the position or the value of other devotees. Because at that time, when Prabhupada left, everyone was Srila Prabhupada's, most everyone was Prabhupada's disciple. Obviously, everyone who was initiated was Prabhupada's disciple. So when the original 11 began initiating disciples, there was a huge distinction, at least perceived distinction, and in practice also, in many ways, for many devotees, between those who were initiating and everyone else. And the reason for that was because Prabhupada was the sole guru of ISKCON, and when Prabhupada left, those who took the position of guru thought or believed, and many people believed, that they should, I don't want to say imitate Prabhupada, but they should do it as Prabhupada did it. And as we know, Prabhupada had Guru Pooja every day, so there was Guru Pooja every day. There was a special seat in each temple for that guru, which was different from the seat that the godbrothers would sit on, and things of this nature, and even to the point that sometimes the gurus felt that if their disciples were listening to other gurus too much, it was a symptom of a lack of chastity towards their guru. So it was very extreme. And in that extreme, there was almost, as Sureshwara was saying last week, it was almost like different movements that were in opposition in one sense to one another. You know, based on fidelity to one particular guru who is in one particular part of the world. And so it was quite an unhealthy environment that was created, almost trying to outdo one another. Or in a sense, sometimes even trying to get people into a particular zone or get disciples or followers to help the preaching or to establish more the service of that particular guru. So it became very much like that guru's service and everyone was helping them. And of course, in response to this situation where God brothers were being minimized and the movement was being divided, and particularly some of these gurus were not able to maintain their position and they neglected following the regative principles and had to either leave voluntarily or be asked to leave their position as guru, that some devotees began reacting on the opposite end and saying, well, actually, Prabhupada's the only guru, and all we can do is initiate disciples for him who become his disciples and not ours, because we're not qualified. And secondly, it's dividing the movement. So if Prabhupada is in the center and there's only one guru, then the movement will be unified. So that was the idea, and that was the basic idea, which was the birth of Ritvik, when the Ritviks believe the total opposite of what was happening right after Prabhupada left. It was, as we say, a swinging of the pendulum. It swung very much into the point where some of the gurus were, I don't want to use the word imitation, but from the perspective of the disciple, the disciple's estimation of the position of their guru was very similar. They were thinking their gurus were very similar to Prabhupada. And then when some of the gurus fell down, it burst the bubble. Of course, Godbrothers knew there was a difference, but sometimes the disciples couldn't see that difference. Ritvik like Christianity? Yeah. A little bit. Something like that, yeah. The truth lies in between both of these. So we're not initiated by Prabhupada, but we're connected as Siksha disciples. So the connection is very close. And the guru who initiates is not the all in all for the disciple. It's a family. So that's what I wanted to talk about, because the balance is in understanding the synergy between all those who help one in spiritual life. Now, if we go back to the time when Prabhupada was here, the sannyasis in ISKCON were probably the closest thing to what we could call Diksha Gurus. So they were kind of like Siksha Gurus. But the Siksha Guru concept, it wasn't really enacted at the time of Srila Prabhupada. So the sannyasis were very much like the Siksha Gurus, although I was saying it, the Siksha Guru concept wasn't a concept that we talked about or knew much about. And because we were all very closely connected with Prabhupada, there wasn't, a need, so to speak, for more gurus. But we often treated the sannyasis or had relationships with the sannyasis like Siksha Gurus, and we saw them as those who were closer to Prabhupada, more intimate, more dedicated. Temple presidents were also seen that way. For us, it was all one unified family, and there was never a contradiction or never a dichotomy between taking shelter and guidance from a temple president or a sannyasi or a senior devotee. We saw and taking shelter and guidance from Srila Prabhupada. We just saw it's all the same, because those who gave us instructions were just giving us Prabhupada's instructions and bringing us closer to Prabhupada. There was absolutely no dichotomy, and those persons were not in any way trying to imitate or take Prabhupada's position, so there was no fear of that, and they couldn't take Prabhupada's position because Prabhupada was a sole guru. So it worked in a synergistic way that we got help from all levels of devotees, God brothers and God sisters, from our equals all the way up to the sannyasis, GBCs, temple presidents. And of course, we didn't have a lot of association with Prabhupada, so we relied very heavily on those who had a lot of association, and we had a lot of faith. We had a lot of faith in them and their instructions. So I believe that it should be the same today. And how? So that's what I want to discuss. So you have this dynamic where you have Srila Prabhupada as the founder acharya, the Siksha Guru of everyone in ISKCON, or as Sureshwar says, everyone's foundational relationship. The foundation of Krishna consciousness is based on a relationship with Prabhupada. And then everyone has a Diksha Guru, or if you don't have a Diksha Guru, you probably have some, the idea is that to aspire for that at some point in your Krishna consciousness. And if you don't have a Diksha Guru, you probably have someone that you respect, or many people that you respect to learn from. So you're taking guidance. And if you have Diksha Guru, then you also may be taking guidance from other people. And if you're living in a temple or working around a temple, then you're working with the GBC, you're working with the temple president, you're working with other senior people. So you're getting a lot of guidance from these people. And so each person has a specific function which nourishes the other person's function and is necessary. And I like to see it like a family. Just like you have a mother and you have a father, and the mother and father's function in some cases is the same, but in some cases it's different because they're different people. They have different natures. So it's the same, but function is different. So Prabhupada says, the Diksha Guru and the Siksha Guru, there's no difference. And why he says that is because the Guru, ultimately we say the Guru is Krishna, because the Guru speaks Krishna's words, and Krishna manifests to a person through the Guru. You serve the Guru, you hear from the Guru, that's the same as serving and hearing from Krishna. Krishna is the Guru manifest through these people. But Prabhupada says, but the difference between Siksha and Diksha is the function. So the Siksha Guru gives instructions, so does the Diksha Guru, but the Diksha Guru gives initiation. The Siksha Guru doesn't give official or formal initiation. So there's a slightly different function, but that initiation function, that difference is not major necessarily. And of course it depends on the disciple, how they see the relationship. But the function of teaching, that's the function of all the gurus. So, give you an example. I think this is a nice example. One temple president told me that, I asked him this question. I said, it seems like you're actually more of a guru to the devotees in your temple than their Diksha Guru, because you're working with them. And he is not directly connected with them on a day-to-day basis, and he may not see them for years or have any interaction. And he said, I'm their Siksha Guru, but it works because if I were their Diksha Guru and Siksha Guru, I don't feel powerful enough or strong enough to help them in their Krishna consciousness the way they're being helped now. But because they get so much inspiration from their Diksha Guru, just knowing that their Diksha Guru is so Krishna conscious, feeling that, listening to his lectures, being connected with him through their thoughts and meditation, then when I give instruction, pertinent instructions on a daily basis, it's not entirely foundational. In other words, it's not all resting upon me, but I have a specific function which works well within that context, because there's a synergy between what the Diksha Guru is giving and what the Siksha Guru is giving. Now that's his personal realization. Now if he were, let's say, a stronger devotee, maybe his realization will be a little different. He might say, yeah, well, the relationship I have with these disciples is very, very intimate, because they don't see their guru very much and they're very inspired by me, and I see that our relationship in many ways is similar to the relationship they have with their Diksha Guru. That may be in many cases, but still, it's still synergistic. Or maybe the Siksha Guru is more prominent, but without the Diksha Guru, it wouldn't be complete. So then I think of it like, okay, you have the mother, father, but you also have uncles, you have cousins, you have teachers, you have ministers. So if you look at yourself and you see how you've been raised and educated, many people, as we say, it takes a village to raise a family, or Suraswar says, it takes a movement to raise a disciple. It's not, everyone has a specific function, and it's a valuable function. So in what we discussed before, in this swinging of the pendulum between, no, it's only the Diksha Guru, no, it's not the Diksha Guru, they're not qualified, it's only Prabhupada, there's another thing that happened within ISKCON to create another kind of imbalance, when, and this potentially can happen anytime within or outside, it's actually happened outside of ISKCON, but it affected ISKCON, very great devotees who begin preaching within their own organizations and having tremendous effect and attracting people. and also saving people who are disciples of Prabhupada or disciples of others who are not doing well, or not save, if not saving them, just inspiring them to go further. Personalities like that are often seen as on an equal level or very close to the level of Prabhupada, or even to the point of, well, here, Prabhupada is gone and now he's here, so everything goes through him. So that's another aspect of the imbalance. It's like this person is now not imitating Prabhupada, but kind of replacing him as the current acharya. So we've seen that. And that we've seen also to some degree in seed form, even within our movement, and it could happen after a great devotee in our movement leaves, very powerful devotee, then people might say he was special beyond everybody else and he should be honored in a special way. And it could create an imbalance within the structure of ISKCON or within people's minds. So the balance is that Prabhupada is the founder acharya, but even beyond that, for us as disciples of Prabhupada, Prabhupada used to speak about his spiritual master and said, and for example, he said, if you distribute books, then you'll get his blessings. So he connected book distribution to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta because Srila Bhaktisiddhanta asked Prabhupada to distribute books. So he made that connection. This is really his instruction, and that the service we're doing of book publication is his direct order. Now, this morning, Sureshwar told me a nice story, and he's going to come back next week. He's doing some research, and he said that the research that he's doing will edify this discussion even more, and he didn't want to come today because he felt this research should be done first. But one thing he told me, which was interesting, he said that Lokanath, Narottam Das Thakur, is a disciple of Lokanath Maharaj, and he prayed to Lokanath Maharaj to get the shelter of Rupa Goswami, or I forget exactly, something to be accepted by Rupa Goswami or to be connected. And so he was using that as an example of this family where we have our guru, but then Rupa Goswami's position is special within our sampradaya. And there's a prayer to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta that said that he didn't say anything which was out of the line of the Siddhanta or the conclusion of Rupa Goswami. So everything goes through Rupa Goswami. And in the spiritual world, those who are Manjaris will be serving. Rupa Manjari is one of many people are under Rupa Manjari. So you can have two meanings. I want shelter Rupa Manjari in terms of my Manjari bhav, and also in terms of my position in this world. But the point is, he's going to his spiritual master and he's saying, please deliver me, please give me the shelter to Rupa Goswami. There's a story, I think it was Shyamananda, but I'm not sure. But in this story, the disciple was handed up the disciplic succession. Each guru in the disciplic succession, including the Goswamis, including Mahaprabhu Nityananda, all the way back to Krishna, appeared, and each one of them handed them up the disciplic succession. So that's such a nice example of what we're discussing here, of how it's a whole family affair, and the guru is delivering you as a disciple to the next guru, and then the next guru. And so here we're saying, Prabhupada would talk about Bhaktisiddhanta blessing us by book distribution, meaning that he's present, he's aware, the blessings are there for the service. And then here we have this example of Rupa Goswami, Narottam Das, praying for the shelter of Rupa Goswami, praying to his guru. Then I have a story I can tell you. There was one devotee who early in the movement found a connection. He found somehow or other, he felt very connected to Nityananda in terms of the position of Nityananda as the most merciful, the one who gives mercy to the most fallen. And he used to pray to Nityananda when he would go out to meet people and distribute books, and you would see him with his hands up in the air, and he would be saying, oh, Nityananda, Nityananda, be merciful. So it was like something, seemed like something from a past life. He had this predilection to Nityananda Prabhu. So he wasn't sure if that was proper or artificial, so he wrote Prabhupada and said, is it okay to pray to Nityananda? Prabhupada said, yes. He said, but you should first pray to your spiritual master that you can pray to Nityananda. And then you can pray to Nityananda that you can pray to Lord Chaitanya. So he showed this line of disciplic succession. How? So let's say you want to pray to Nityananda or Lord Chaitanya, or you want the shelter of Srila Prabhupada, or you're distributing books and you're praying for the mercy of Bhaktisiddhanta to fulfill this order of his to distribute books. You pray to your spiritual master, say, my dear spiritual master, I ask for your blessings that I can pray to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, or I can pray to Srila Prabhupada, and then, so Prabhupada, I'm asking your blessings, I can pray to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta for his mercy so I can distribute books. I'm asking my Guru Maharaj, I'm asking for your mercy to pray to Prabhupada, I'm asking Prabhupada for your mercy that I can pray to Nityananda. Like that. So it's a connection. It's not a this or that, or that's better or that's worse. It works synergistically. And each guru has a position. And so why not, you know, we can say, why not benefit yourself by taking the guidance of so many? Now, Prabhupada used to say to us sometimes that you're learning about Bhaktisiddhanta through me. And Prabhupada used extensively, especially in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's commentary. He also referred to the Goswamis, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and so forth. So what we're getting in Prabhupada's books often is the association of these other acharyas. And so one time Prabhupada said, when you read the Nectar of Devotion, you're associating with Rupa Goswami personally. So, but how are we doing it? Well, Prabhupada gave us Rupa Goswami. So by Prabhupada's mercy, we're able to associate with Rupa Goswami. So it's through Prabhupada that we get that association. Now another example, nice example, it's in, I think, the second or third to last verse of the Bhagavad Gita. And Prabhupada talks about, or brings up a question, well, how am I chanting Hare Krishna? Am I connected directly to the holy name? Doesn't it have to go through the guru? And Prabhupada said, well, you get the holy name through the guru, but when you chant, the connection is direct. So that's, it's kind of a similar example where, like, the guru is delivering Krishna or through the holy name. And so you get it from him, and then you can directly approach the holy name. Even though you're doing it through him, the connection is direct. Or like you're worshiping the deity, so you're offering your obeisances to the guru, you're making your prayers, and then you engage in the worship of the deity by his mercy, but you're directly now serving the deity. So this synergy is, I think, key to understanding this. Now, Vidyananda Maharaj made a very nice point. There is a lecture, and I don't know the link, it's on YouTube, and Vidyananda Maharaj gave a lecture at a, what do they call it, the Prabhupada, maybe Memorial Festival in Los Angeles. I think that's what they call it. Anyway, it's Memorial Day weekend. Maybe that's why I'm saying Memorial. The Prabhupada Festival in Los Angeles in May. And there is, on YouTube, Vidyananda Maharaj is speaking about Prabhupada. And he makes an interesting point. He makes actually many points. I suggest you see that. But one point he makes, he said, he was making the point that his disciples can have as intimate a connection with Srila Prabhupada as any disciple of Prabhupada. And he said, if that were not true, then each generation would be further away from Prabhupada. So when you are 1,000 generations down the road, then you're 1,000 generations removed from Prabhupada. And if that were true, then how could ISKCON continue? But because Prabhupada and the connection with the disciplic succession is not material and not limited by the four dimensions, or three dimensions, or two dimensions, or one dimension, is not limited by material dimension, then our relationship with Prabhupada is accessible, and it will be accessible to generations of devotees in the future. And our, as Sureshwar was saying last week, our relationship, our connection with Prabhupada is foundational. It's in a sense foundational to our relationship with our Diksha Guru or other Siksha Gurus, because they are all seeing themselves as representing what Prabhupada is teaching. And their service is to represent those teachings and help their disciples come closer to Prabhupada. Now, I want to tell you something important. So, if you're not paying attention, pay attention. This is very important. As you know, or if you don't know, you'll know now, but I'm sure you do, that, and I already mentioned this, that some of those devotees who took up the service to accept disciples and give diksha found themselves weak and unable to continue in that service and gave up that service. And some even today are not following Krishna consciousness strictly. So, how did disciples deal with that? Because it's a very traumatic experience, and actually, unfortunately, it happened recently again. How do disciples deal with that? Well, I can't say because I've never went through that, but what I can say is what disciples have told me, particularly I can tell you both, the ones that had a hard time and the ones that didn't have a hard time. I wanted to focus on the ones that didn't have a hard time. And what they said was that they didn't see such a distinction between Prabhupada, their guru, and the other leaders, not necessarily their own Siksha gurus, but just people that inspired them or just general senior devotees who would give classes and in that way indirectly help them. They said they didn't see such a distinction, and that they understood that Prabhupada, as the foundational founder Acharya, the foundational guru, that they understood, not only they understood that, but they connected with that on such a level, and not only connected with it externally, but internally in terms of feeling connected, that here, this is my guru. When you say, talk about Prabhupada, Prabhupada is my guru. It's Siksha, but he's also your guru. And that Siksha could even be more prominent in your life than the Siksha you get from your Diksha Guru. So those who had the least trouble said they felt connected to Prabhupada. Prabhupada was like the beacon. That's where they were focused. They understood their guru was only connecting them to Prabhupada or clarifying what Prabhupada was teaching, just helping them understand who Prabhupada was and how to serve them. So when their guru left, although it was traumatic, quote unquote, it wasn't so traumatic, quote unquote, because their connection with Prabhupada was still intact, and their connection with other senior devotees that they respected, who had been guiding them, was intact. So, okay, and their initiation is still intact because they were initiated, they're still connected. All right, their guru is not there, but there's this whole family, kind of like, you know, your father dies, but there's this whole family. Your uncles are there, your brothers are there, your mother is there, your minister is there, your teachers are there. You know, you still have an infrastructure. So that's how they explained it. So I think it's really important for us to understand this, because I was just thinking a mathematical calculation, that many, many people are coming to ISKCON young, and they're getting initiated young. And most of the devotees, I would say probably all now, of the devotees who are giving diksha are 60 or older. And so 60 means, all right, what's their average lifespan? So maybe the gurus who are giving initiation now will live, on the average, let's say another 15 years. Some may not even live that long. But so let's say you get initiation when you're 25. Okay, let's say 30. You get initiation when you're 30, and when you're 45, your guru leaves. And let's say you live another 30 years. Most of your life is going to be spent without your guru. That's what happened to us as Prabhupada's disciples, right? When Prabhupada left, I was 27. Right? So Prabhupada left in 1977. So I was only a devotee for 7 years. So most of my life has been spent without him. And what I'm saying is, if anyone's initiated young, most of your, you know, unless your guru lives to be like 108, you're going to spend a good part of your life without the presence of your spiritual master. But if you're deeply connected to Srila Prabhupada, you won't feel the loss as greatly as if your entire focus or your majority of your focus is on your guru. I would rephrase that in saying, if you're connected with Srila Prabhupada, well connected, and other senior devotees, and you know, deeply connected with also Prabhupada's mission in ISKCON, then when your guru leaves, it's not going to be such a traumatic thing, because it's not like the root was pulled out of your life. Now, does that make sense? In other words, you know, you're still firmly rooted in your connection with Prabhupada and your connection with others and your connection with ISKCON. And so, although you feel separation from your guru, you can no longer ask him questions and so forth, there's still a movement there. There's still a structure. There's still so many people to ask. And you're still, and your connection with Prabhupada is strong. So that remains. And your guru was helping you connect with Prabhupada. Now, when I'd ask devotees what happened after Prabhupada left and how did you deal with it, the devotees who had the least trouble said, well, my Guru Maharaj always preached about Prabhupada. And he always kind of, how should we say it, you know, directed everything to Prabhupada and didn't take such a big position for himself. I don't know if that's the right way to say it, but I think you get the idea that the focus was strongly on Prabhupada. So when he left, you know, I appreciated that he had connected me with Prabhupada, and I remained, you know, I was reading Prabhupada's books and working in ISKCON, and I felt that connection, and I continued. So yes, it was upsetting, difficult, but not life-threatening. Whereas some devotees, when their guru left, they collapsed because it was their connection with Prabhupada had not developed deeply. Their connection with their guru was deep, and their connection with others was not deep. So it was like he was the only one. They didn't have deep connections with counselors or senior devotees, hadn't really deeply connected with Prabhupada for whatever reason. And when their guru left, they kind of fell apart. Now, some devotees went outside of ISKCON to other gurus. They didn't. And connection with guru is eternal. But for many of us in the neophyte stage, that connection with the physical form, it's more perceivable, and it's what, it was like the saying, you know, what's the difference between the book Bhagavad and the person Bhagavad? And one of Prabhupada's godbrothers said, the person Bhagavad can grab your ear and pull you. You know, it's more forceful, I think, or Prabhupada said that. You know, the person's more forceful. So there's a person in front of you, pushing you, guiding you. You can become very dependent on that. And it's more difficult to feel and associate and be connected with a guru. It's more of a challenge when he's not physically present. It requires more Krishna consciousness, but it is true. But in this example, I think it's different, because these gurus were leaving, these gurus left. So now where's your connection? In other words, it's like, okay, you're very connected with your guru, and your guru leaves the world, and you still feel this connection, right? But what if your guru leaves, and you're not deeply connected with ISKCON, you're not deeply connected with Prabhupada, you're not deeply connected with other leaders Siksha Gurus, Sannyasis, senior people, temple presidents, GBC within ISKCON. If your entire connection was around your guru, and then your guru leaves, that's where the trouble came. So that's what we're talking about in this particular scenario. And so people who were in that scenario where it was like everything was their guru, they weren't really connected with other people, weren't really deeply connecting with Prabhupada, reading his books, listening to his lectures. It was only, I only listen to my guru's lectures, I only read his books, I don't want to hear from anybody else. They had a lot of trouble when their guru left. So, yeah. Thank you for asking that question, because that clarifies that's what we're talking about in this situation. And those who saw it as a family, you know, that it's not just my Diksha Guru, it's that I need so many people. I mean, even as disciples of Prabhupada, we really were very dependent on our godbrothers, especially the senior ones and the sannyasis, that we never felt that our Krishna consciousness was just sufficient being with Prabhupada. Never felt that way, although, you know, you could say philosophically, yes, Prabhupada gave us everything. But part of what he gave us was the Sangha. And so we felt very dependent on that Sangha. Now, there's another dynamic that comes into this, because if we're just talking philosophy, guru-disciple relationship, guru is not an institutional position. Guru is a relationship, and it transcends institution. But ISKCON is an institution, and there are gurus within the institution, and therefore there's a structure in which the gurus are working in, and that structure is that Prabhupada's the founder acharya of ISKCON, so therefore there's this natural connection that the gurus make to ISKCON and to Prabhupada, even though the relationship is not institutional. The position is not institutional. It's simultaneously one and different. Like Bhakti Charaswami says, he says to his disciples, if I ever become so crazy that I get frustrated with ISKCON and leave, my instruction to you, now that I've been in a sober state of mind, is if I leave, don't leave. In other words, so he's making the point that your connection with Prabhupada and ISKCON is more important than your connection with me, because if I did something where I got frustrated and said, I'm leaving ISKCON, starting my own movement or joining another movement, don't come with me. Your connection is with Prabhupada and ISKCON. So that traditionally would sound like, well, that's philosophically off, because guru is not an institutional position. Guru is a relationship. No, Guru Maharaj, my relationship is with you. But in this context in which we're speaking, within a preaching movement within Prabhupada as a founder acharya, it broadens. So it's not just your relationship with your guru, it's your relation, your guru founded ISKCON, you're serving within ISKCON, you're understanding the mission of ISKCON by understanding what Prabhupada wanted and why he established this movement and how you fit in and how you're connected with him and how you relate to your Diksha Guru and how you relate to other Siksha Gurus, which is why when your Diksha Guru leaves ISKCON, you don't go, but you stay, you know. So it's a very interesting dynamic. Where in history, I mean, maybe that's there somewhere in history in the Sri Sampradaya, but your guru leaves the organization and you stay within the organization. It's a very interesting dynamic, you know, especially if you look at it from the textbook point of view that, you know, whatever your guru says, you do. So, of course, Shastra says, if your guru says don't surrender to Krishna, then you can reject your guru, because how you become asura. And as long as your guru says surrender to Krishna, you cannot reject him. But if he says don't surrender to Krishna, then you can reject him. So in the same way, what Bhakti Charaswami is saying is, if I say don't surrender to ISKCON, then you can reject me. Then I'm not bona fide. So my bona fides, or whatever the bona fides, however you say that, my bona fides come from being connected to my spiritual master, connected to his movement, and connecting my disciples to my spiritual master and to his movement. Now, then you might say, well, will it come to a point, and is this wrong, that I have a disciple who's so connected to Prabhupada that he's just, you know, he's like a Prabhupada disciple. He's always reading Prabhupada's books, always listening to his lectures, always talking about Prabhupada. Is that wrong? Is that extreme? It's not wrong if it's natural, if that's real. And why would any guru think that's wrong? Unless the guru suspected that there was some impurity within that person that was generating this consciousness. But otherwise, the guru would think, well, this is wonderful that you're so attached to Prabhupada and serving in ISKCON. And that's the way it's supposed to be. And that, and as you can see, the preaching of every devotee in ISKCON, what is the preaching? Not surrender to me. Of course, if you're a guru, you may have to say surrender to the guru. But ultimately, when that guru is saying surrender to the guru, he's not just, he understands, okay, the disciple has to do what I ask, but he's also thinking surrendering to Prabhupada. That's part of it. Surrender to guru means surrender to Prabhupada. So, if a guru has a disciple that's totally surrendered to Prabhupada, the guru feels, well, I've done my service, I've done my duty. This is perfection. I'm happy with this disciple. At the same time, that disciple who is totally connected to Prabhupada, always hearing from Prabhupada, reading his articles, his books, listening to his lectures, in doing that, he's not disconnecting from his spiritual master. So it's not one or the other, as I was saying in the beginning of the talk, where sometimes we make it one or the other. Well, if I'm going to be connected to Prabhupada, it must mean I'm going to be disconnected from Prabhupada's disciples, or I'm going to be disconnected from my spiritual master. No, they're not mutually exclusive. Dedicated totally to Prabhupada and his mission, dedicated totally to his spiritual master, who is dedicated totally to Prabhupada and his mission, dedicated to helping and serving other godbrothers, other senior devotees, other junior devotees. We have to see it as a chinta, beta, beta, tattva, and I don't even know if it's a chinta. It's a chintya. A chintya means inconceivable. It's just beta, beta, tattva means something is one and something is different at the same time. So we can be deeply connected both with Prabhupada, our guru, and other people. And it's not that if you become deeply connected with a devotee who you see as Siksha Guru, you're disobeying your spiritual master. That could be because maybe the person who's speaking to you is saying things which are different from your spiritual master, and then you do those things. But generally within ISKCON, that is not really an issue because everyone, we all are reading the same books and representing the same siddhanta. But if you're going taking guidance outside of ISKCON, that could be more of an issue. Not that I'm saying you should, but it can be an issue. But generally the idea is the Siksha Diksha Guru, they're all lined up. And sometimes what happens is a disciple becomes very closely connected to their Siksha Guru. And I think this also happens after the departure of the guru, where one may feel the need to take shelter of another person who they see like their guru, and the relationship may become very intimate and very, very deep. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing. It doesn't mean that if your relationship with the Siksha Guru is very deep, it's minimizing or weakening the relationship with your Diksha Guru. We shouldn't see it that way, because it's not true. And if we see it that way, then we can't follow our heart naturally. We will be afraid to give our heart to somebody because we'll think, well, maybe I'm being unchaste to my guru by giving my heart to this Siksha Guru. But that's not true. Unless that Siksha Guru is just opposed to what your spiritual master is saying and telling you he's wrong and confusing you and upsetting you, and that's a different thing. But the idea of this talk is to emphasize that's in most cases within ISKCON is not the case. So we have this unique situation in ISKCON where there's an organization and you have so many people with whom you can get guidance, not just one person. And you have the perfect founder Acharya who is representing so many other Acharyas. And so serving your guru means serving Prabhupada, means serving the previous Acharyas. And it's all synergistic. It's all, if we balance it, then we've come to the proper conclusion. When, just to end, I want to end here, then you can ask some questions. Two, when this red fig thing was coming up, some devotees, when they looked at it, they thought, okay, if only Prabhupada is the initiating guru, then the problem of the Zonal Acharya, we wouldn't be there. We would be more unified. And then we will also eliminate the problem of a guru falling down and the difficulties it causes for the movement and for disciples when their guru leaves. So from that pragmatic point of view, it looked very attractive. So some devotees would look at it and say, this looks attractive. And then they would say, but there's nowhere in our Shastra where we can support this idea. It doesn't exist. So, you know, we can't just look at things from an external point of view, how it would work externally, but we have to look at things from the point of view of what the scriptures teach and understand it maturely and apply it in a way that it's not fanatical, it's balanced. We were very fanatical in the beginning. It's very balanced, it's very clear, and it just works. And the reason I think that things have not worked in the past in some areas in ISKCON is because we were a little too fanatical or a little too opposed to the fanaticism. And it was reflected a lack of understanding of how to balance two extremes. Now, I live in India and I see for Indians, these extremes are easier to balance because within Indian culture, if you grow up in India, you learn from the very beginning to respect elders. Like an elder walks into a classroom, everybody stands up. That doesn't happen in America. Children in traditional families, when they wake up in the morning, they go and they bow down and touch the feet of their mother or their father. So this is part of the culture. So when Indians become devotees, offering respects to senior Vaishnavas, offering respects to god brothers and god sisters of their guru is quite natural, and it doesn't create a dichotomy that I'm treating this god brother or god sister of my guru like my guru. It doesn't create any problem. It's totally natural for them. Sometimes for Westerners, we can get mental. Is this right? Am I doing it too much? Sometimes one will take deep shelter of a six-year guru. Maybe one will feel it's wrong or guilty. Generally, Indians don't have that dilemma. It's just part of it. There's nothing, there's no like, there's not too much, they don't feel bad giving or wrong or guilty or shameful or question giving too much respect to someone. They feel very natural. They feel that's what they're supposed to do. They don't see such a distinction between a senior devotee and their guru. So that's good. That's how it's meant to be, because as we said, Krishna is the guru, is one. So you're seeing the same thing in another person. And they're looking at this other person and they're serving this other person like they would serve their guru, because this is the god brother, god sister, and it's no problem for them. And they're not worried, oh, this person, maybe he'll become too powerful, maybe it'll go to his head, maybe he'll eclipse Srila Prabhupada, maybe he'll eclipse my guru. That thought is not there in their minds. They just want to serve. They want to honor, because that's their culture and that's their training. So it's not an if or. It's not no. We have to pull this one down, make sure he's lower, put this one higher, make sure it's very clear, and then put this one higher. And it's going to be different for different devotees. So some devotees will feel a very deep connection to their Diksha Guru. Some will feel a very deep connection to some Siksha Guru. Some will feel much deeper connection to Prabhupada than all their other gurus. And it will evolve, or some will feel balanced equally between all of them. It will evolve as you advance in Krishna consciousness. And is one thing wrong or right? I don't think we should think of it so much as what's wrong or right, as much as understanding what is wrong and right. And then once you understand, allowing your heart to go wherever it wants to go. And that'll be perfect. Okay, so it's seven. It's okay. Your time should be what, 7 minutes to 9? Eastern Standard Time. So, does anyone have any questions or comments? I'll, you want to chat in some question or comment on this? I have kind of finished the point I wanted to make. Well, we're going to elaborate on this next week when Sureshwar comes. And, well, while you're thinking of a question, I can tell you something that I want to ask Sureshwar about next week. An interesting thing that he told me, that, you know, he teaches this in his course, and he's working with the GBC because the GBC have it as a mission to, you know, to, while we as Prabhupada's disciples are alive, to make sure that we firmly establish the central foundational position of Prabhupada and the position of all gurus that will follow who give initiation in relation to that. And so he's teaching this in his course and how to establish this. And he said that in some places he teaches certain things about this, putting, you know, as we were saying, putting this emphasis on Srila Prabhupada's position as a foundational acharya. And some people kind of feel that it's minimizing their spiritual master, and they take offense, and there's resistance to it. And we discussed that, and I'm going to ask him about that, why, what they're resisting. But just as a little appetizer for next week, preview of coming attractions, that what he feels and what he observes is that because we weren't clear about the position of Diksha Guru and in relation to Srila Prabhupada in the beginning, that we started off on a wrong foot, and it created understandings that in some places, in some ways, still exist within ISKCON that are not correct. And therefore, there's some resistance to some of the things that he teaches. Now, what he's teaching, he's already checked with senior devotees, GBC, that it's not controversial in that sense. It's that nobody's out there thinking, why is Sureshwar teaching this? This is not right. This is supported by the leaders of the movement. So it's just noticing that the culture in ISKCON is such that when some of these things are spoken of in relation to Prabhupada and his foundational position, that there's some misunderstanding or some resistance. And I experienced this, I think it was Prabhupada's disappearance day, and I was very inspired. And I was in a temple where there was a lot of friction going on. And I said, it's my deep conviction that if we just give ourselves to Prabhupada what he wanted, it will solve all the problems. And some devotees took that as an offense to their guru, that I was minimizing their guru. So it's interesting that they would think that way. By my focusing on Prabhupada, they felt I was minimizing their guru. So that's a possible misunderstanding people have. By focusing on Prabhupada, we're not minimizing anybody. We're only maximizing Prabhupada, not at anyone's expense. And every Diksha Guru, every glorious disciple of Prabhupada, by their actions glorifies Prabhupada, that Prabhupada has such wonderful disciples. So, you know, it all works together. Okay, so Sudevi has a question. I know it's understood the Siksha Guru is important and expected for a healthy spiritual life, but I've always wondered if it's proper etiquette to ask your Diksha Guru for permission for taking shelter of Siksha Guru. Yeah, that's better. Unless you already know your Diksha Guru loves this person and they're always together and working together and like that, or, you know. And 99% of the time your Diksha Guru will be very happy if you've taken shelter. But that is the etiquette. It's better to ask. I mean, and I think it's also important to understand what it means by Siksha Guru. In other words, if you're asking somebody some questions once in a while, you know, like I get emails and someone just asks me a question, I don't think they see me as a Siksha Guru, and I don't see them as a Siksha disciple, because it's, you know, and I'll get a letter once a year from somebody, and, you know, they'll take off where they left a year ago with the problem that they were dealing with. That's not really what we mean by Siksha Guru. And I may say something, and they may say, well, I don't know if I want to do that, or I don't know if I agree with that. And so they'll just take it the way they want to take it. But Siksha Guru is, it's a more serious relationship where when you're going to this person with very serious considerations, philosophical and practical, in your life, and you're accepting their guidance more or less absolutely, you know, how you would accept from your Diksha Guru, but maybe you don't have access to your Diksha Guru, or maybe you feel in certain areas this person who you see as Siksha Guru is more well equipped. They know your situation better, their status of life is different, they have experience in a certain area. And if you feel that kind of connection and you regularly want to take instruction from them with that kind of deep faith, okay, that's Siksha Guru. So that's a serious relationship. So naturally, you want to ask your Diksha Guru, because it's like you're establishing a fairly serious relationship. But if it's just, you know, you're going to go, somebody's visiting your temple, you go ask them a few questions, you know, you don't connect with them beyond that until they visit next time. And, you know, you consider, you know, like sometimes you ask people and they give you an answer and you kind of consider it. Whereas with other persons, the Siksha Guru, you don't think, yeah, maybe I'll think about it. You think, oh, this is what he's telling me to do. Okay, this is serious. So I think that's important to understand. And that is the general etiquette. In rare situations, your Diksha Guru may not want you to, and you may be very attached to your Siksha Guru, and you may go crazy. In that case, ask your Siksha Guru what to do, because your Diksha Guru just said not to take instruction from you. He doesn't like it for this reason or that. I mean, that happened in the story of Shyamananda. His guru didn't understand what happened, but it ended happily. Usually it can end happily. Okay. So Pallavi says, thank you for clearing this point. I was starting to feel it's not right that I can only relate to lectures and articles by my Guruji. But Prabhu, does this indicate lack of advancement, that I can't relate so much to other senior writings or lectures? It's not wrong to want to relate to your Guru Maharaj. I mean, that's one of the reasons that you choose him as your guru, because you relate. So that's not bad. But the thing to understand is that your spiritual master does not exist in a vacuum. He exists within a structure, and he is representative of Prabhupada. So now you may feel like, well, he understands Prabhupada better than I do, so I like hearing about Prabhupada from him. Okay, that's true also. But not that other people, other devotees, won't give you good advice, good instruction, that you can't hear from them. Not that you think, well, I read Prabhupada's books, what do I understand? I should just read my spiritual master's books. No, it has to be, it should be, as I'm saying, it should be both. Now, so in answer to your question, it might be just because you don't understand that, or it might be that you have very strong taste from hearing about your spiritual master, you like the way he explains things, and that's good also. But what I would say there's nothing wrong with that, and I would say, but by hearing from others and reading from Prabhupada, you'll get a more balanced view. Because some spiritual masters will tend to focus on certain things, like some tend to focus very strongly on developing Vaishnava behavior and character. Some focus very strongly on spreading Krishna consciousness, giving to others. Some focus very strongly on book distribution. Some focus very strongly on varnashram, on the importance of going back to the earth's simplicity. Some will tend to focus strongly on austerity. Some will tend to focus on like very practical things that we deal with. So it's good to hear all those things, isn't it? Let's say your Guru Maharaj is very much focused on varnashram, and you live in the city, and it's like it's Christmas now, and everyone's talking about book distribution. You want to go to someone who can inspire you in book distribution. So it's not a fault of your spiritual master, but he's focused on developing a farm project, and now you're in the city, and you want to get inspired for book distribution. So you go to Vaisheshika Prabhu's website, and he's the book distribution minister, and he's enthusing everyone for book distribution. You listen to his lectures and go, wow, I'm inspired to go out. Let me go out and meet somebody and give them a book. Just like You go out shopping, you could take a book with you today and you could offer it to somebody. And because you listened to Vaisheshika's lecture, now you're inspired to go out and give a book. You know, maybe your Guru Maharaj inspired you to milk a cow and you're walking around looking for a cow to milk. You know? So maybe that's not practical. So you see what I'm saying? So think of it as a family. You're attached to your father. I mean, your father is your father, and to not be attached to your father is weird, right? But you can be attached to your uncle, you can be attached to your teacher, you can be attached to your mother, your brother. There's if you see it in that way, then your attachment to your father is wonderful. As long as it doesn't exclude a natural attachment that should be there for other people, and especially primarily for Prabhupada. Probably saying, when do I start getting worried? You get worried when you're not reading Prabhupada, and you don't want to read Prabhupada's books. You don't want to hear a kirtan of Srila Prabhupada's, you don't want to hear a lecture. No, he's our founder Acharya. You have a relationship, see him as your sixth guru. You want to listen to him. You want to understand his mission, how he's preaching. And then, when you hear your spiritual master preaching things that Prabhupada said, it'll even make more sense to you. So, because your spiritual master will say something, and you'll say, yeah, I heard that Prabhupada said that. Oh, right, that's what it means. Oh, yeah, I kind of thought it meant that. This is even more clear. So, I think also, at least this is what I've observed for many people in the beginning of their Krishna consciousness, because they're weaker, they're more dependent on their spiritual master. Because their spiritual master is there, they can talk to their spiritual master, they can ask questions. It's like the toddler, you know, they need the hand of their parent. As they become stronger, they get more, you know, they're able to walk more easily, it changes. And sometimes you'll see with very senior devotees who are initiated by Prabhupada's disciples, their relationship with their spiritual master, it's very internalized. Where externally, you'll see them much like Prabhupada disciples. They're just talking about Prabhupada. They don't even talk much about their spiritual master. They're talking about Prabhupada, talking about what they read about Prabhupada, the lecture he heard, Prabhupada this, Prabhupada that. But they've internalized their relationship with their guru in such a way that it's not, my Guru Maharaj said this, he said that, he did this, he did that. You know, it's not like, not that that's wrong, but it's kind of gone to another level. They've connected more deeply with Prabhupada. That's the best way I can explain it. Or maybe that wasn't a good explanation, but maybe I can't explain it any better. I mean, that's what I observe. I see that younger devotees naturally tend to be more dependent, and therefore more attached in that sense. Not that senior devotees are not attached to their guru. Then you run into this area in which you may have an expertise in an area where your spiritual master doesn't, and it's a practical thing. And your spiritual master may want to do something a certain way, and you may say, no, Guru Maharaj, that wouldn't be good, because if you do that, this will happen, and it'll create this problem. So sometimes you might have to take that position on a practical level. So that's also something we have to deal with. But on the absolute level, when the spiritual master is preaching, you say, okay, what he says is true. But he's advising this, but I know in India, if you do this, then you'll get cheated. So I have to tell them, no, Guru Maharaj, don't do that. They'll cheat you. Or that's not the way it's done in India. You have to go to this office and do this. And say, oh, okay. Hope that helps. Anyway, you can think about it. And this is being recorded, and it'll be up on krishna.com, hopefully soon.